Well, we've come to the final feature of our program this evening. And we call this one the Next Generation. You've heard from some veterans, heard from some people who have made aviation what it is today. And now we're going to look to the future. Eric Lindbergh, the grandson of Charles Lindbergh, celebrated his famous grandfather's transatlantic flight by completing the route himself. In 2002. I think our PA system's getting a little tired. Barrington Irving, on March 23, 2007, this year, Barrington Irving, a 23-year-old from Florida, in a single-engine plane called Inspiration, made a 26,800-mile round-the-world flight, becoming the youngest person ever to do so, and the first African-American to do it. Jemiah Larkins is a national spokesman for the EAA Vision of Eagles and a second organization, Careers in Aviation, a nonprofit organization promoting aviation opportunities for young people. He soloed at the age of 14. He's accumulated 760 hours total flight time in 36 different aircraft. Now, the format for this final program tonight is this. We're going to have each of these gentlemen come out one at a time and spend just a few minutes talking about their lives and their careers, and then we're going to put all of them in these chairs over here and have kind of a roundtable discussion, and then we will open it up to you for audience participation and questions. So since Jemiah is 23 and Barrington is 23, I think we'll ask the old man of the group, 42-year-old Eric Lindbergh, to come out first. Eric?
Usually I'm the young guy at Oshkosh. Is there anybody out there? Oh. I'm speechless. I've never been the old guy. Has anybody heard me talk? So you have to say, because I can't see. You've heard me talk. So okay, I'm done. Thanks. For those of you that haven't, I'll just tell you that it was not a foregone conclusion that a Lindbergh was a pilot. People said, oh, you must have been born with a pilot's license in your back pocket. It's not true at all. And in fact, maybe it was a little too obvious for me to be a pilot. There was no pressure at all. And my grandfather, being the most famous person on the planet for a time in that early part of the century, really took its toll on him and his privacy and our family, and that reticence, that intensity of fame caused him and my grandmother and Marl Lindbergh to really stay out of these bright lights. And in the latter half of their lives, and that hesitancy to put ourselves out into public worked its way down the generations. And it really wasn't until a buddy of mine, whose name is Eric, too, kept bugging me about flying and flight, and he's just this guy who wouldn't stop talking. He made me watch a video when I went over to his house about flying an airplane, and I just took a demo flight, and we should do this, blah, 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 blah. I finally got so tired of him doing it that I went and took a demo flight out at the local airport, Bremerton, Washington, and I went up flying, and I went, oh, this is cool. And that's what got me into all this trouble. But really, it was that I needed to understand what it was all about. And let me tell you, in high school, I got a C- grade point average. Not really, yeah, you're laughing. Not really proud of that. But it's because when the bell rang, I was gone. I had way more important things to do with my life. And I just wasn't captivated. I did good in certain classes. I metal shop and some others that I was interested in. And I tried to do my homework while I was in class, because when I was gone, it was done. I just wouldn't do it. And you know, it turns out that grandfather flunked out of the University of Wisconsin. Is it because he was dumb? I don't think so. It's because it didn't capture him. And when I got to college, I actually did get into college. I got B's. And it's because I was able to take some classes I wanted, and I had to pay for half of it too. A little more incentive. But it wasn't until I got my private license and I saw what my instructor was doing and thought, I could do that. I think I want to do that. And so I went and got my commercial and CFI and all these. I went to flight school, and you know what? I got a 4 point in flight school, and I'm not very good at math. And I don't know how I figured out those NDB approaches and the rules and the reg, the FAA. Holy moly! Those things are intense. But I wanted it so bad that it gave me the juice to go get it. And that's why I love aviation. It has all kinds of utilitarian purposes, but in the end, it's inspiration. It's juice. It's that it gives something very, very intense. And if we don't inspire the next generation to go get the juice, if we don't give them the juice to go out and learn and become lifelong learners and have passion and revitalize aviation, then we're not going to be sitting in the left seat. Someone else is going to be dictating what aviation looks like in the future. And that's not something I want to see. That's why I'm involved with the Aviation High School in Seattle, involved with Young Eagles, with AOPA Project Pilot, and Angel Flight. We simply have to do everything we can to juice the next generation, or we're going to lose the greatest freedom that we have in this country. So with that, I don't know, I think they all went home, but I'm going to go sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Next, we're going to bring out someone who also made a transatlantic flight and covered a few more oceans in the process, Barrington Irving. Barrington?
Good afternoon, everyone. Or should I say good evening? Certainly a pleasure to be here with you all. Back on June 27th, I just recently completed a solo flight around the world. And yes, it made me the youngest person to do so, but my whole purpose in... Thank you. My whole purpose in pursuing this flight and going after it was really to prove a point to other students that it doesn't matter where you're coming from, what you have, what you don't have. All that matters is your passion for something that you have in life, and anything is attainable within the aviation industry. I grew up without having anyone in my family that was involved in aviation or had any exposure to aviation. And if it wasn't for a United Airlines captain that reached out to me right before I turned 16 years of age, I wouldn't be standing here in front of you all. He did not have a multi-million dollar presentation. He didn't have a PowerPoint presentation for me. The only thing he had was his experience within the industry, and he took the time out to share that with me. And from that single moment, I turned down a lot of football scholarships, pursued a career in aviation, took a lot of criticism, a lot of people laughed at me, a lot of my peers and everything when I made that decision. But I was able to accomplish this flight with the help of him, also with the help of Eric and many others. I flew around the world in a Columbia 400. What was expected to take me 4 to 6 weeks, took me 97 days. 97 days of a unique marriage with Mother Nature, and a marriage that I soon divorced on June 27th. But nevertheless, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, we really have a serious problem with getting our young people involved in the aviation and aerospace industries. A lot of them, it comes off as an intimidating industry. And I can personally say that because I myself didn't think that I was smart enough to become a pilot. I even told my mentor that I didn't think I was smart enough to do the math, to do the science, and so forth. And a lot of students have potential. It took me 4 years to complete this flight. People rejected me for the first 2.5 years. They told me I was too young. There's no way I can do it. When I left for this flight, I only had 640 flight hours. And I think the main reason why I was able to make it around the world safely was that I promised everyone that I would stay within my limits as a pilot and within the limits of the aircraft. An amazing adventure and a very capable aircraft in which I received over 300,000 in donated parts. And Columbia Aircraft manufactured the 400 for me. So it really worked out, and just grateful to be here and, you know, speak further about, you know, what we can do to get more of our students involved in the industry, because as this flight has shown me around the world is that there are other countries that are revamping and getting more students involved in engineering, and we need to do the same. So I look forward to speaking with you all further. Thank you.
And finally, Jemiah Larkins, who is a spokesman, an official spokesman for the EAA. Jemiah?
Good evening, everyone. I'm actually pretty excited today because I just came from the 15th anniversary of the Young Eagles program and its accomplishments that it's happened over the past 15 years. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be standing here today, because my journey to EAA AirVenture started almost 11 years ago, actually a little bit over 11 years ago, when I took my first flight with the Young Eagles program in my hometown of Augusta, Georgia. And because of that flight, I had my dream of becoming a pilot and getting involved inside of the aviation industry. And I was able to actually accomplish that goal and actually exceed it. But during that time of accomplishing that goal and getting involved inside of the aviation industry, I started learning a little bit more about it and seeing some of all of the different exciting opportunities that we have, that we see every single day here at EAA AirVenture, all of the new exciting products and announcements and launches that we see that go in here that excite us. But during that excitement, I also started recognizing some of the issues that we're going to be facing over the next decade and several decades to come if we don't do something about that. And that's one, growing our industry. I mean, as Tom Poperesny frequently says, years ago, we had over 800,000 licensed pilots, and now we have a little bit over 600,000. And that trend is not truly reversing, and that's something that we need to be very concerned about. If you look at also the statistics of people that actually have careers inside of the industry, there was a recent statistic that was done that actually the United States Congress is currently acting on that stated more than one out of four aerospace workers will be eligible to retire by the end of 2008. And that's just next year. When we have over a quarter of the workforce eligible to retire, what's going to happen? Who's going to replace the air traffic controllers, the maintenance side of the industry, business side, the pilots? And it's even more amazing to see the lowering standards of all the airlines just because of the pilots that they need to have, especially at the regionals. I mean, there's some regionals hiring with 250 hours in a total time and 50 hours of multi-time, and that's just completely different than what it was several years ago. And that's one of the reasons why I decided that I wanted to launch the Dream Launch program. A couple of years ago, while I was in class at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, the opportunity came to me that maybe I could do my part to kind of help grow the industry and travel around the country and hopefully excite other young people to think about career opportunities inside of the aviation industry, not just inside of the cockpit, but as well as out. And because of that, this fall we'll be doing the fourth Dream Launch tour, where we'll be traveling to over 20 different cities and continuing to talk to students and hopefully inspiring them to accomplish their dreams. So thank you.
Well, you've heard from these three interesting gentlemen, and I want to ask Jemiah, because he obviously is concerned about the future of aviation and about getting young people interested in aviation. What do you think about the new sport pilot rule?
I'm extremely excited about it, actually. One of the big deterrents, I think, that stops a lot of people from getting involved inside it, there's many, but one of them is cost. And anything to help lower the cost of flying, to make it more accessible to more people, is something that I think is a true benefit for the industry. And with the validation of some of the major industry players, Cessna and Cirrus and some of the others getting involved in that market, I'm excited to see the technology that they will bring down into it, and also see the products that will eventually start coming out and the impact that that will have to attract more people into the industry.
Well, obviously, as a 23-year-old, you do have your eye on the future and on getting young people involved. I thought that LSA stood for longevity for seniors in aviation. I'm going to be 72 next week, And I just sold my Cessna 340 and ordered one of the new sport aircraft. And actually, it takes me back to my roots because, like you, I started flying when I was 15 years old. And I'm going to be back to flying those light, slow, single-engine, fun aircraft. And I can hardly wait. Eric, there are a lot of things that people know about you. There are some things that maybe they don't know about you, like the fact that you're an artist. Tell us about your art.
Oh, you're going to embarrass me. I some people see things in clouds, and I see things in wood. And I make furniture and sculptures out of wood, and I've been bronzing some now, some aircraft and rocket ships. I had because I was involved with XPRIZE and Norbert Rutan, I had the fortune of having him send six of my little mini rockets, the first bronze sculptures up into space. Pretty cool, but I'm really psyched about this piece I just finished, which is a music stand, and it looks like it's on fire. It just all these twists and turns, and I put some copper on it, and I built mm-hmm. I built the base and the top separately, and I'm proud of the engineering on because it's adjustable. I don't really play music, but I understand they sit or stand. And we had to use a snowboard screw and a thing and great. And I put the two together and they looked terrible. So I had to redo the bass. Anyway, just this sort of process of agony and intensity and failure and throwing that aside and starting again and doing it again and coming up with something. In the end, it's way more beautiful than the pieces themselves. It's all that struggle. The struggle with education, the struggle with finding ourselves as humans, us as males in a society that values, you know, achievement and all this stuff, and it's intense. We struggle, we work, we hard, and here's this beautiful thing when you go for it and you're inspired by it. And that's, to me, the metaphor of what we really have to do in the future. If aviation does not drive the dialogue of solutions, if aviation does not give people inspiration, if we don't really find ways to reach people, we're going to lose them. And we're going to lose aviation slowly but surely. And it's truly one of the greatest freedoms that we have.
I think it's interesting. Absolutely. I think it's interesting the multifaceted nature of so many pilots. And we saw a demonstration of that earlier. That was this evening, wasn't it, that we had the band out here playing? Yes, that was just a few hours ago. The EAA all-volunteer band with musicians from all over the country coming together and making beautiful music, and most of them pilots. I asked how many pilots and had them stand up. Barrington, something people may not know about you is that you are, in addition to being an accomplished pilot who's flown around the world and set records, multiple records, you're also an entrepreneur.
Yes, I am. One of the things this flight has really taught me, especially for the first 2.5 years, was, if no one wants to give you the opportunity or the chance, you make it happen. And I think James Brown probably said it best in one of his songs where he said, "I'm not asking you to give me anything. All I'm asking you to do is open up the doors and I'll walk in the door and take it myself." And that's the kind of attitude that I had to have. And I developed my own nonprofit organization called Experience Aviation. And after developing that, it's just amazing. Doing the filing for the paperwork, when the IRS approved me, I called them up and just to make sure I was approved, I double-checked all the numbers and everything, and I got it on the first chance. And then from there, went on to start an Experience Aviation Learning Center. And what I try to do is, you look at EAA and you look at other organizations and you have these tremendous resources that are available to the students, but the students just don't know. And I'm basically utilizing my age to bridge that gap. And you want to take a student from, aviation is interesting, to, you know what, I think I can do this. And that's part of the problem that we have. We need more mentors to support students, to give them that belief that they can accomplish it. And then we also, at the same time, need to limit the intimidating factor that comes off when you talk about aviation and make it come off as something friendly, as something doable and accomplishable, and that's what I try to do.
I was kidding you backstage before we came out here about flying your home built around the world. It wasn't actually a home built, but the story of how Barrington got that plane put together is really quite fascinating. For those who may not have read it or heard about it, why don't you briefly tell us about that?
Well, since no one wanted to give me a plane, lease me a plane, or rent me a plane, I just figured, okay, what if I could get the individual parts sponsored and donated? First of all, let me clear the air and let everyone know that I would never fly anything that I built on my own. So that's that. But I approached Columbia Aircraft and I said, look, you know, this is what I want to do. All I'm asking is if I can get the parts donated, will you honor that and build the aircraft, assemble the aircraft? And that's what they did. Continental Motors sponsored the engine, Avedon sponsored the cockpit system. And from that simple approach, I was able to get over 300,000 in donated parts.
I want to ask one question to all three of you, and then we're going to open it up for the audience to participate. We'll start with you, Jamile, and go right down the line. What do you think is the most important contribution that those of us who do not have your notoriety, because you all have accomplished interesting and groundbreaking things in aviation, but for those of us who are just average Joes out there flying our airplanes, interested in aviation and wanting to inspire kids for the future, we know what you can do. What can we do?
Educate and share. It's a very simple process. One of the biggest reasons why people get involved inside of aviation from a general aviation standpoint, even possibly as a professional career, is because of an experience that they had inside of the cockpit, no matter what age they are. And by sharing the gift of flight with other people, you can show them that they have the opportunity to get involved. So the biggest thing that, in my opinion, people can do is just invite someone to go flying with them and show them what flying's all about. And that way they take out they give the trust factor of someone that they know, giving them the opportunity to go flying with them, but at the same time experiencing the world from a different perspective.
Very good.
I think what worked for me was someone taking the time out. When the United Airlines captain approached me, yes, to speak with them, you know, that was nice and everything, but what really stood out to me was here was a professional involved in an industry that I knew nothing about taking time out for me. You know, man, I better pay attention. And that's the attitude that I had. And that stuck out to me more than anything because it wasn't just about flying. You know, when we first started to talk, it was, you know, how's your grades? How are you doing in school? You know, are you staying out of trouble and so forth? And he really showed a vested interest in my life, and that stood out to me the most. And then from that, I said, okay, if this person is making the time for me, then I should make the time for him and at least listen to him and try to understand where he's coming from. Because, you know, I didn't have any background in aviation, so to gain that understanding took some time. And from that, I think the greatest thing you can give is time, and which relates to what Jamal said.
Not all the teachers are in the classroom, are they?
Yeah.
Eric?
And something you said earlier, which is that you aren't exposed to aviation in general, in school, anywhere else. You kind of learn about it. It really is that personal touch. If it weren't for my buddy Eric seriously pestering me, I wouldn't have discovered it on my own. Because that whole sort of Lindbergophobia with Lindbergh family members, and it was the exact opposite. I really needed to taste it in order to know that I wanted it and I liked it, and that gave me the juice. And I love the education piece because, and I don't want to educate people. I misspoke. I love the inspiration piece because. If people are inspired to learn, they'll go out and do whatever it is they need to do to get it, even if they're as dumb as me. And they'll fight through the hard spots, and they'll get there, and they'll do it. And they'll become not just pilots, they'll become lifelong learners. And they'll go, I don't care if they stay in aviation or space or woodworking, my passions. I care that they're engaged. If we can engage people at a young age, And you know, whatever age that is, for me it was a little bit older, 24. But and I could have lost it. You know, I was hanging out with the crowd. Some of them are dead now. And I could have been one of them just quite easily. People think, oh, you're a Lindbergh, huh? Quite the opposite. And if it weren't for aviation, I wouldn't be here today. And it is that absolute juice that it gives, and we need to pass it forward. There's no other way about it. And aviation, the age of the pilots eligible for retirement and the mechanics, et cetera. I'll tell you what, the demographics are changing extremely rapidly, and the next few years are going to be huge, and light sport is going to be epic. And we live in an extraordinary age of technology. We're seeing technologies out here that are, look at that flying car thing. And I know a guy that's working on, you know, vertical takeoff gyrocopter that's rotable, that fly. I mean, there is extraordinary things going on. We need to keep that going.
And it's possible to inspire people even when they're older to get into aviation. My wife was in her late 40s when I inspired her to become a pilot. She asked me one day as we were flying.
That sounds really old.
Yeah, I know, from your perspective. But we were flying one day at about 20,000 feet in pressurized comfort and having our coffee. And she said, what would happen if you had a heart attack? And I said, you would die. And she signed up the next day for flight lessons. So inspiration comes in many, many different forms.
There's a hammer.
All right, who has a question for our panel?
Thank you for your inspiration, but I think you're forgetting the politicians we have in this country. Some airports are doing their level best to, in the guise of security, to hinder the spirit of the Wright brothers and everybody else since. And until we get some people who have the position to get some respect from the top down, general aviation's got some problems.
It only has problems when we follow what the politicians want to do. And that's the issue. If we lead, the politicians will follow. So we have to find the creative solutions. We have to lead. And that's the only way it's going to happen, is if we build the grassroots and build it and drive the dialogue. Because otherwise, they are going to shut us down. Not all of them, but some of them.
I think, Eric, that what Tom Pobrezny and EAA did in getting the sport pilot, the light sport pilot rule through, is evidence of what pilots, what the aviation community can accomplish. And I'm telling you, that has breathed more life into what was a very stagnant industry, that is the creation of single-engine light airplanes. And I walked down through the LSA mall today and just looked at all of the new planes on the market that a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years ago, you didn't see any of these airplanes, and people are buying them. But you're right. It's still a democracy, and we still can have an effect.
I don't care if it's the current administration or the one before it. They're all right, I won't say it.
Responsive to our needs.
Yeah,
that
well, that's
saying?
What I meant yes. to say.
Next is down in the middle.
Good evening. This question is for Eric Lindbergh. In regard to your grandparents, they were both notable authors, as were their siblings. I was wondering if you've made any efforts to put pen to paper and produce some inspirational reading for younger folks.
The writing gene bypassed me. Actually, I've been practicing, and I have two books in me. I've been practicing by writing emails. And I'm getting better at writing. And I've been writing this column for AOPA, an AOPA pilot. And I hope you guys are reading it, because I'm working on it real hard. In fact, I have a deadline real soon. There I was up on stage at... and I do. I have a book that I think the way to start, because I'm so busy working on my next... No, I'm not supposed to say that.
You want to make some news here today?
No.
Your next aviation challenge?
The trauma of my last flight that Barrington's still fresh out of has worn off. So I'm thinking a lot about what to do and how to marry this legacy in aviation with this legacy I have of the environment and balancing advances in technology with preservation of the environment. And aviation is facing tremendous pressures. We all get it. It's not just user fees, it's noise, and it's people wanting to shut down the airports, and it's low student starts, and aviation is in trouble. The environment is in trouble, facing a lot of threats. And I have this legacy, and I've been on the board of the Lindbergh Foundation for a long time. I was 30 years old, trying to incentivize creative solutions and giving grants to people. So how are we going to marry that? And this is my dedication in life right now, is to how to use aviation through the overview effect to drive the solution dialogue, to create solutions to problems. We have all these aviation's top 10 list of aviation environmental problems. We have all the usual suspects are on there: invasive plants and the health of the oceans, and of course global warming. The top of this particular list I looked up, which was ecology graduate students, is apathy. Apathy? Who cares? You guys are slow. But if we can address apathy, we can address all of those problems, and we need to use aviation to drive that dialogue and to incentivize that and to drive education and create a culture of participation and creative solutions. And if we do that, we can make headway on all those things. And it's not the politicians who are going to help us. It's going to have to be us. So sorry, I need to write a book.
We have time for two more questions.
Yes, right here.
Hello, my name's Devin York from York Enterprises. I started out in this industry as well. I'm a young individual. I got my pilot's license before my driver's license through the Air Cadet program in Canada. Just want your thoughts up front with the three of you, ways through how you got your career started and all that in the aviation industry. I walked through the LSA booth area there today and noticed the prices from anywhere from $80,000 up to $180,000 for an aircraft. What's your thoughts to get the young individuals into the sport for the cost of these aircraft? Being so high. I'm a manufacturer myself with a new business trying to promote myself in this industry. And it's awfully hard when I see the price of an LSA being $180,000 for a simple aircraft anymore.
Yeah, Barrington. Other than buying the parts and having them put together, how do you beat that price?
I think before we even get to that question, I think all of us really need to step back here, and look at the situation, and look at what worked in the past. You know, yes, we have politicians. Yes, we have rising costs for aviation and all this stuff. But when, back in the days of Lindbergh and other greats, they weren't worried about that. They did whatever it took to fly. And what I ask myself right now is, where is that attitude in this present day and age, where people are willing to do whatever it takes to fly? And the rising cost of flying, the rising cost of even for light sport aircraft, If a student was asking me, well, Barrington, how do I afford an aircraft for $160,000, $180,000? Well, you get out there, you put a package together, you solicit the people, you try to get someone to help you learn how to fly, you wash airplanes, you do whatever it takes.
Create clubs.
Yeah, create clubs. I mean, we've lost that passion to do whatever it takes to fly. And that is something that really, even when it comes to politicians, when I left, Florida, we're famous. We're famous when it comes to politics. And when I left out of Miami, a lot of politicians didn't want to support me and so forth. I came back, I saw all these politicians at my arrival I'd never seen before. and the same ones that rejected me. See, we have to create the demand. If we create the demand, they have no choice but to bow to that demand.
because they're after votes and they're after people. And that's the power that we have that we're not using.
Jamil, it seems to me that EAA is at the forefront of this question of how can we afford to fly? I mean, kit planes and building our own planes, and this has been another way that aviation has been rejuvenated, and of course, you're out front now with the EAA as an official spokesman.
I definitely think that the light sport aircraft and the kit market has made it more affordable and accessible to more people than before. But everyone in this room knows that even though it's more affordable, it's still not in the average reach of the average American. And that's something that we have to work on. One of the ways, which is not an immediate way that we're going to lower the cost immediately, at least, is to get more people involved. I mean, it's a supply and demand type issue. You have low demand, you're going to have high prices. If you have a higher volume of sales, then you're going to have the ability to lower the cost and still generate the same amount of profits or the amount of profits that the companies need to generate.
If I could inject just one political comment, because it seems to be okay on this stage. If we could get the cost of liability down in this country and the lawsuits that always go for the deep pockets, regardless of who is really responsible. We've made some progress in that area in recent years, but I'm told by some manufacturers' reps that up to half of the cost of a new airplane is the liability, not the metal and the fabric and the engines.
And that's true. And also on another aspect of the insurance side, the only way that we're going to be able to lower the cost for us to be able to do that is when we're proactive and we take the right decisions inside we make the right decisions inside of the cockpit. Risk management is such an important thing that we need to do, not only to lower the cost of flying for ourselves and have an actual bottom line impact on our own pockets, but also for the perception of the industry. Because each and every time that we have an accident that was preventable, that gets promoted in the news, that only provides one additional black eye for general aviation.
We have one more question right here.
Inspiration, dreams. That's what really is what we have to wake up in the kids. And we can only do it by one of my favorite films. It's called Paid Forward. Really, take it up every day. Pay it forward. Get the kids to dream and away from all this cyber world, and tell them what's reality, what it feels like. That's really important. And you guys are showing it. I mean, that's all really what it takes.
And that's a good note to end on. And we thank you all for your patience. You were the ones who hung with us till the very, very end, and we thank you for that. And I think those who, for whatever reasons, had to leave earlier certainly missed some inspiration and some enlightenment and a lot of fun. And thank you, Eric and Barrington and Jamil, very much for putting a wonderful and appropriate cap on what's been a great evening. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.